Today she will talk about falling in love, the truth behind the romance. Ladies and gentlemen, Juliana Esteves.
Thank you. Wow, thank you. It's my first time here in Fusion in Germany. I am very happy to be here to speak about this subject to you. I am amazed with the festival. I am really happy to see all these different tribes together celebrating in peace. I'm very, amazed. And I will also say that my English is not too good, so I will sometimes ask for help. So today I want to talk about what is behind romance. What happens when we fall in love? So I will be basing myself in Jungian, louder, okay. I will be talking about love, but in a Jungian perspective. Did someone here heard about Carl Jung? Oh, good, great. Someone heard about animus and anima? Good. Some people, great. So, what I want to talk is about stages of love. What happens? What really happens when you fall in love? So, I created this image to explain that usually we live different stages in relationship. Everything here can be present or cannot be present in a relation, in a love situation. We need to be predisposed to be in love, but everything can happen and the relationship can be over in every moment, in any moment here. So to talk about predisposition, I will explain a bit about this image. Oh, it's changed. Interesting. It's not like that, but it seems like. So this is the psychic model of Jung. Wow, it's amazing. It's a lot of people. This subject is really important, right? Great. I will not explain this model. This is 1 year course to explain that. So I'm not to that. I will not do that. What I want to tell is that we are not one. We are not one. We are plural. We are much more than the ego, which is this thing that I call I, and I am aware of myself. When I am aware of myself, I call myself I, me, Juliana, and I have memories, I have stories, I have my motor behavior, I have my feelings, I have my thoughts, I have my beliefs, and this is what I call I. But I am much more than that. This is only the conscious part of me. This is this ego part. And it has a persona, a social mask. And it also has, in this personal unconscious, we have lots of parts that are not conscious and that really influences us a lot, actually. So lots of times I say, well, I want to do a diet, and then I see a chocolate and I will have to eat this chocolate. Or I don't want to do that, and I do that. Or I believe in that, and I will do what I believe, and then I don't do what I believe. What is happening? What? And sometimes I fight with myself, like, you're stupid. So this is parts of us that are acting through us, through the ego. What I want to explain today, this talk is about this part, animus and anima. So what is that, actually? What is important about this model is that Jung says that these interior parts, one of these parts is the shadow, everything that I don't like in myself, and socially, I am. Everybody says to me, this is not good, this is evil, this is immoral, this is unfair. All these aspects of me, envy, anger, fear, or even good things like sensibility, I will repress unconsciously, I will not decide that, and it's going to be in a part of me called shadow, which is my very evil and mean part. Everybody here have shadow. It's human, it's archetype. I will explain a little bit about that. And this part is very near to this other part, which is animus and anima. Animus and anima, all these parts, including shadow, including animus and anima, and other complexes, they are autonomous. This is what Jung said that is interesting, which is they have their own personality, which is that when we are hyper unilateral in our consciousness, like I am like that, I do like that, this is what I want, this is how I function, these other parts that are repressed, they revolt and then possess the ego, literally. We are possessed temporarily, sometimes for months, but we are just crazy in that, and sometimes we say, what I was doing? What happened just now? This what happened was that something possessed me from inside, these internal figures that exist in us, according to Jung, of course. And we also have these animus and anima parts, which are very interesting aspects of ourselves. So what happens is that... these are our unconscious elements of masculine and feminine psyche. So Jung says that masculine psychology is different from feminine psychology. We don't have the same brain. We don't have the same way of functioning. We are different because we have different internal figures. I will explain a little bit also about homosexuality in other differences. But for everybody, it's the same. If I am a woman, inside of me, if I identify myself as a woman, being gay or not, I grow up being a woman, feeling like a woman, thinking, acting, wanting like a woman. And these are archetypal behaviors, which are also social behaviors. And I also have an interior figure that is a male part. So every woman have a male inside of her, a man inside of her. And every man have a woman inside of him. Inside of him, yes. So what happens with these figures that are very predominant in the psyche, is that first of all, they are archetypal. They are not personal. Everybody inherited that. What is an archetype? I like to explain an archetype as a form of a cake. Imagine that we have our cake that I will call the universal experience of love. So everybody here is born with this form of cake. And I will be putting things in this form, my own experience. Like the way my mother loved me, the way I saw the love between my parents, the way I experienced the first love in my life, the second, the third, everything that I saw in television, movie, and this archetypal way of transmitting some values, I absorb, and then I create my own cake, which can be chocolate cake, different from the other one, which is a walnut cake. But the form, it's universal. Everybody has this universal archetypal form inside of itself. And we also have this universal male inside of us and female inside of us. So what happens is that this male part will be... created by the experience of the opposite sex, depending what I relate to. When Jung created this theory, it was 100 years ago, so it was not so, we were not so complete and androgynous as we are today. Today we are much more, I am a woman and I work, and I can have children or not, and I can do things that a man can do, and a man also can do things that a woman can do. But in the beginning of the theory, it was very... padronized, I don't know how to say that. It was very... Old-fashioned, yeah, it was. So what happened is that now what we know is that what I have in my conscious part, what I develop in my conscious side, become the opposite is in inside of me. So what happens really is that this part of me will start growing and becoming a very specific and unique kind of person, of male aspect in myself, for example. So, let me just... Oh, okay, I will talk about that in a minute. So, let's... my example, for example. So, I grew up as a thinking person, and like... preoccupying myself with social issues or relational issues or creative issues, and other aspects of me become undeveloped and go to my shadow and to my animus part. And there are lots of aspects of my male part that I don't know but were being created inside of me. And suddenly I see someone that looks like my animus, my male part. He looks, the look is like him. It's a kind of person that I, what's that? He looks like my animus. He thinks like my animus. He acts like my animus. So when I look at him, what happens? I feel in love. Like, oh, wow, who is this person? Sometimes I don't even talk to the person. It passes and I'm just, whoa, what's that? Because that person is a projective target of a part of me that I completely don't know. So when I see this part of me, this part that I sometimes want to connect, want to know, because I need to develop in my consciousness, I simply am in love with that part. I'm just, wow, this is amazing. Archetypically, anima and animus are different. They are not the same. They are very different, actually. Anima is linked to eros. Men and women are different, if you realize that. We are equal, but not the same. So what happens is, man is much more comfortable with logos, with reason. Thinking, planning, theorizing, dealing with some practical subjects. Some men, because not every man, but universally, archetypically, it's like that. Male energy, young energy is like that. And with feelings, they are not so comfortable. So when you ask a man, what are you feeling? What's going on? What are you feeling? Usually, he says, I don't know. I am confused. I don't know what I'm feeling. When you ask a woman what she's feeling, she knows exactly what she's feeling. I'm feeling, that you're bored with me because I know that you don't know what you're feeling. And what happens is that she knows everything millimetrically detailed what she's feeling, and he just don't know. He just don't know. And when you want to talk to a woman about some objective subject without putting emotions, it's difficult for her. For example, if some couple, if a guy says, oh, let's take a look in the polyamory talk, she would say, what? Why do you want to do that? What does it mean? No, it's, I just want to look to the talk. And she starts immediately putting feelings there. Like, what does it mean? It's difficult for her to be completely objective. Like, this is just a talk. Let's just talk about that. Because it's normal for her to put eros to connect emotionally to everything. So she cannot take eros out. And men cannot take logos out. So this is the difference of their psychology. So what we call anima is linked to eros, feeling. Links man to his emotional life. It's the mediatrix between ego and unconscious, a projection-making factor behind the selection of a partner. So this kind of woman that a man has inside of her, this kind of person that looks like something and acts like something and has some principles in her, when he meets a woman like that, he will fall in love. He will say, he will befriend, he will fall in love, he will say, I like that, I need that, I relate to that. So he will want to have this in his consciousness, but through relationship. And the same happens to the woman. But let's just explore a bit more about anima. She holds the image of the internal woman, which acts like a bridge, guide, and mediator between his ego and the soul image. It's wild and fertile, this archetypical female inside of him. It's what brings him inspiration. It's what brings him sensibility, relatedness. It's the man's soul giving depth to his existence, giving also sensibility and flexibility. It governs his capacity to love, his empathy, and the relationship to his spiritual side. Animal is related to intuition, creativity, fantasy, interiority. So animal has these aspects. Animus is the masculine principle, a woman's spirit image, similarly projected in her selection of a partner. This spirit is part of a woman which has a relation to things philosophically, is the woman's logos, reason, and it's also a mediator to the unconscious. So first thing important, I'm not saying that woman doesn't have logos. I am saying that woman has logos inside. Outside, she's Eros. Inside, she's logos. When a woman has a deep relationship with her animus, she can use logos quite well because she dialogues with him. So she can use logos. She uses her mind, her objectivity. The same thing with the artist, man. He's connected to his anima. He's a help. He's a partner inside of him. He's married inside of him. But when you don't have this relationship inside of you, you start needing the other person to do this part for you because you cannot develop that for yourself in your consciousness. So still about animus. An integrated animus gives a woman self-confidence, non-submission, courage, trust in herself, spiritual growth. Animus personifies logos, logic, objectivity, autonomy, mental creativity, critical thinking, and power. The masculine qualities are strength, will, verb, act, meaning. This is archetypical, of course. We are not archetypes. We are very complex, and we relate very dynamically with all these elements in us. But in a way, it's easier for female energy, easier. And it doesn't mean you have to be a woman. You can be a man with lots of female energy. It's easier to relate to Eros. And for men, it's easier to relate to Logos. So these are just some concepts that are important for us to understand what happens when, what is the predisposition. First, we need to have a psyche. All of us, we all have. We need somehow to start relating to these parts of us. Something in us, we are just developing some conscious parts, and then we start needing. I need something else to be complete. Jung talks a lot about something that is the individuation process. In the middle of that first image was the figure of the self, which is different from the ego. The self for Jung is like superior, higher self, or a supraconscient aspect of myself. Something that creates the dreams when we are at night, dreams that can be perfect metaphors for our conscious life or for our interior processes. So this aspect of the self is not complete. We are not in this position. We relate to this position sometimes, but usually we are in the ego. We are in our personality. So animus and anima will hold some aspects of our own self. Then we will talk a little bit about falling in love. What happens when we fall in love? Well, first of all, we need to find the perfect projective target. We need to find someone that can receive the projection for us, that I can say, whoa, you are my animus. When I see this person, and when this person also sees in me his projective target, we can start a romance. This is what happens. So a love hook happens, and I start being linked to your needs and start representing parts of you that you need me, that you need me to do for you and to express for you, and you start doing the same thing for me. This is the first stages of this is not love yet. This is just falling in love. You are completely in love when you are really unconscious of these parts of you. So when you see the other, you're just like, oh, what an amazing person. And what really is happening is that you are looking to yourself in a mirror that the other one is reflecting somehow. So you are really being in love to a part of you that is unconscious, that is undeveloped. So first stages of relationship, you don't see the other. There is no other yet. You are just, I am here, you are there, and I am just relating to myself through you. So it's quite a selfish moment. And this is where romance starts. This is where love hook starts. So what happens is that to have a relationship, we need three situations here. We need me, my personality, my conscious ego. We need my animus, the part that wants to relate, the part that's ready to be projected. And we need a projective target, the real other, the real person. So to explain a little bit how this works, I wanted to do a PowerPoint on that, but I was in the plane. So I asked a friend, some friends to do a thing here. Can you come, please? It's just to understand what really happens in a relationship. Thanks. So, you two will be the archetypical couple. And you two will be, you will be his anima. And you will be her animus. So what happens, you come here, you go there. What happens is that first, they look to each other. Thank you. Do that. They look to each other. When they look to each other, she somehow feels that he's a perfect projective target. So she's just... And he responds to that like, oh, I think she's too. This is the beginning of relationship. What really is happening is that they are deeply falling in love. Animus and anima. This is the magnetic attraction. Perfect. They are terribly in love. They are complements to each other. Really in love. So, but what happens here is that she must have a relationship with him too. They must have some kind of, relate to your animus. They must have some kind of relationship, because if they don't know each other, soon the amazing projection that they are doing, like, you are everything to me, I found the ultimate meaning of life revealed through you, this will fall and she will start seeing the shitty part of herself in the guy. She will start projecting the shadow when she cannot stand that, because we are not always, we fit a bit the projection. We are not the perfect projection. We're not the perfect target. So in the beginning, let's suppose that Yogo says, I love reggae music. And Chiara says, okay, let's listen to reggae music. And after 2 months of Bob Marley, she starts, I cannot listen to that anymore. And she cannot sustain the projection that she is doing in her. I know that you don't listen to reggae music. So she will, soon she will start not wanting to hold this projection. She won't start to be herself. And he will need to accept her. What happens is that if this projection starts to fall, they will start having conflicts. Conflict is the more important stage of a relationship. It only will start after conflict. So what happens is that this man, instead of helping her to have a good relationship with her real other partner, he will start putting himself, sabotaging the relationship. So you just say,
he's a failure.
And you will say to him, you are a failure.
You are a failure.
So, and you will say to her, you are a witch.
You are a witch.
You will say, she's a monster.
monstrous.
You're a monster.
So, you are a monster.
What will happen soon is that they will start having fights that are completely archetypical. It could be a movie. They are not really talking about any issue. They are just, it's just animus and anima in conflict. And these two, when they fight, is monstrous. Every time these two, you can fight now. Ah!
You're a loser!
Fuck you!
Every time these guys fight, the ego is defeated. Like, shit, what did I say? When I say these words, remember that. Why did I use those words? When you say that, it's because it was not you using the words. It was animus and anima, using archetypical words. Using the worst aspects of animus and animas, which I will talk a bit. Do you want to do something else? So thank you very much. Thank you. What soon will happen when conflict arises is that conflict. What really happens is that we are going to be possessed by the anima or the animus, the negative aspect of us. So when I am possessed by animus, logos will work in a very inferior way. Which means that because I don't have a good relationship with my animus, because I cannot talk with this part of myself, relate to this part of my self-consciousness, develop consciously this part of myself, this part that is very, trancado, locked. He's locked inside of you saying, if you don't do that, I will do it for you anyway. In an unrefined, in a basic, in a primitive way. So he will start emitting opinions, judgment, criticism towards the man. So this is how logos works in the very basic, non-refined way in women. She starts being critic. She starts being aggressive. She starts being judgmental. With some sentences that are pure nonsense, but seems to have an authority behind it. So this is the part that really annoys men. Like, again, that. And men, when he's possessed by his anima, he will start being moody, childish. So the emotions, the unrefined, primordial, basic, infantile emotions possess him, and he will act like that towards the woman and towards everyone, actually, because a man that can be possessed by his anima because he feels offended, so the emotional, because he's not aware of his emotions and he's not used to talk about his emotions, what is making him sad or what make him feel offended. Because of that, he will be possessed by this emotional aspect and he will start throwing emotions in a very infantile way towards the woman. So he will be moody, he will be jealous, irrationally jealous, like, what is that? He will be childish and he will act with in a dependent way, in a way that he's dependent, like a child. So what really happens here is that this negative animus and anima can rise because we are not relating to them. The issue here is, what do we do when this happens? Because these are deep unconscious processes that we don't really... Whoops, I talk about that already. That we don't really see that are happening in our life. So I think the challenge here is, first of all, important thing to be aware of this panorama. It's the first time in humanity that we try to put sex, love, romance, and marriage in the same person. I don't know if you knew that. We never did that in history. You used to have a wife, which is a business person, a person that I love, that I adore distantly, a person that I can really love and relate to, and a person that I can have sex, or persons that I can have sex. This is what used to happen. Now we put everything in one person. So we really wait for the person to be very, because we are becoming more and more complete. We are not dividing ourselves in different parts, and we're becoming more complete. We are putting that in one person. Well, we can also put that in more than one person, but this is the next talk, I think. But we can put. But you imagine what would happen with this stage if we have three people involved. So another animus and anima, or four people involved. The complexity is very big. It is really crazy what can happen. So what I think is important here is the fact that when I am possessed by this energy, how can I be aware, how can I realize that this is not really me? This is not my ego. This is not my choice. This is not my will. There's something in me that is making me act like that. And most of the times I regret after doing the scene, the archetypical fight scene, conflict scene, which is important. This moment is very important. Because if we don't let the projection fall, we enter in a compensatory relationship, which is something very shitty. What happens? Well, if I have a relationship with you and I enter in this harmony complex or perfect archetype of relationship, what happens is that I will start not really feeling myself. I will fit the projection and I will need you to do some things for me forever, not developing them. For example, grandpa and grandma, old times, today it still happens, but not so obviously like that. But my grandpa and my grandpa was the thinker. He would think for both, deal with money, do business. She would know nothing about money, business, nothing on that. She will be the relating person. She will be connected to the children, to the grandchildren, to family, to food, to harmony in home. And she will need him to bring money home, to deal with things. She would not even put the TV. I don't know how to use the remote control. She was like that. And my grandpa would do everything. So they were depending. They will create a codependency. Old times, it was really obvious. Today is not so obvious, but we can see relationships that are compensating each other. So I say to you, I need you to be my animus because I will not develop this part of me, ever. It's too difficult. I want to be unilateral in my way of living. It's easier. And the man, which has a hook, will put this thing in me and will say, okay, I will do the same. I also don't want to develop some parts of me, and you will be doing this part of me forever. And we will be in peace. Soon there will be no conflict in this relationship. Everybody will see, oh, they are perfect for each other. They will talk like that. They will be long times doing the same things, the same routines. Eros will die. Soon they will stop fucking. Very soon. Like, mom and dad, we are mom and dad, always mom and dad. He will call her mom, she will call him dad. Don't do that ever. This will kill everything. So what happens is that if in a moment, like let's suppose they are 7 years living this projection deeply, and then one day she starts reading a book. The friend gave me this book. And she will start reading and say, oh my God, I need to do something with me. And she will start doing yoga first. She do yoga, and then you're going every Tuesday. And she will do 2 days a week, and then she will do a workshop and retreat, and she will do some self-development work, and we will enter therapy. My God. The husbands of my clients, they hate me. They say, she's much worse since she met you. Much worse. And I said, of course she is. She stopped fitting your projection. What happens is that one of them will say, you are not fitting my animus. Who are you? I need you to be what you were. And the person will say, I don't want to fit your animus anymore. So a gap of consciousness will be happening between them. If real love is present, even though he's unconscious, she or him, I'm saying she, but it could perfectly be him, he will start developing himself. She will be dependent, saying, don't do that, being afraid, being possessive, being crazy, or he. And then what will happen is that if there is love, he will say, come with me. You need to develop yourself. I will not do this for you. I think you must do for yourself. Or she will say, I know that you support me, but I want to make my own money. I know that you do this for us, but I want to do it by myself. And I don't want to do that for you anymore. Do it for yourself. And the guy will start freaking out. Or the girl. So there's lots of tips important for this moment. One of the tips is that a question, which is, I think it's very useful, which is, whose problem is this? I say to my man, I'm going to Fusion, take care of our kids for some days. And he says, this face, he do this, the face. And inside of me, I think, whose problem is this? It's his problem. If he wants to talk to me and say, I think you already did 7 journeys this year, so I don't think it's good, or I would like to go to, or I'm feeling this or that, and he can express his anima, I can talk to that and we can find a place, a common place. If he don't talk about that, I cannot just, what's the face? Why are you doing the face? I cannot do that, and my animus will start attacking him. Blah. And his anima. If an animus is constellated, the anima will be constellated immediately. We cannot, unless one is super conscious, like, it's the animus. It's our animus, it's not you, it's your animus. So if that happens, it's great, because it seems that someone is aware of what's going on, and immediately the other can step out of the possession. Imagine. All time, it would be like a God possessing us. And it is, but it's internal. Something possesses us. So the question, whose problem is this, is very easy for us to, wait, whose problem is, are you not okay with that? Why would you not be okay with me being happy? Why? If I'm going to go out with my friends. Suppose that you are here with your girlfriend and you say, I'm going to dance with those friends. And she don't want to go. So she says, nah, 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 nah. Whose problem is this? It's her problem. But it's interesting to ask, why am I not happy with his happiness? If he's happy doing what he likes, why do I need him to depend and be only happy with me? What is this need? So I start to develop some kind of independence, and I start to be not half. This is something important. Another issue. I'm going to test. There's lots of content. So what is the... We can have 3 kinds of love equation. We can have 1 + 1 = 1. Me and you are one. We are one. So I love you. Without you, I am incomplete. I am half of a person, and you are another half. We are soulmates. And without you, I die. I need you. I need you. Who says I need you? I need you in adult life? Babies. So soon, I need you. I need you means no sex. Baby needs me. I don't want to have sex with my babies. So I need you. This half-half is the die of Eros in the relationship. But there's lots of relationship where people are half. They feel, without you, I cannot live. I am not complete. This is the opposite of individuation, which I did not explain. I will one day. And then second equation. 1 + 1 = 2. So I am me, you are you, and we relate sometimes. So don't talk about sharing money or sharing issues. Sometimes I go to your house, I don't bring my toothbrush because I have my things, you have your own. It's extreme individuality. So the link cannot be complete because there is not the third, which is the third equation. 1 + 1 = 3. Me, you, and us. This is the equation that can create individuality in one hand, and in the other hand, interdependence, not codependence. I need you, otherwise I will die without you. I need you. No, I don't. I love sharing things with you. I learn with you. I grow with you. I want to create lots of things with you, but I don't want to need you. I don't want that. Even though some people has a special vocation to marriage, to be together, to individuate through marriage. I will talk a little bit about that too. So these three kinds of equations are three possibilities of love. None of them are wrong, even though I prefer the third. But none of them are, some people are not, it's not their way to individuation, it's not relationship. So I want to be an individual, I don't want to be. Nya, nya, nya. So it's 1 + 1 = 2 or equal 0. I don't want to have relationship. It's also okay. But some people can live differently. Well, let me see where I was. I was in the compensatory dynamic. So this, to avoid conflict, I can stay here forever. But probably if some... The compensatory relationship has little growth. It's a relationship that does not grow. It's always the same. It's static. It's not dynamic. So when one of them starts evolving, when kids go home or when something else happens, they simply enter in conflict. And this is really good. This is really good. Truth is that, sorry, it's the opposite. Conflict can lead to that. This will lead to self-knowledge. This is the very important part that can promote the end of the relationship. So if this gap, when the person is doing yoga and the other says, why you are doing yoga? Why you are reading books? Why you are going out with your friends? Why you are studying? Why you start working? Why you start doing things for yourself? Why you don't need me anymore? Why you don't want me to do those things for you? What happens is that the gap of consciousness, if the other one refuses to grow, it's inevitable, the separation. They cannot be together anymore. I'm not anymore the perfect target for your anima. I want to be me. And I need another target in order to project other aspects of me, because I already brought to my consciousness some aspects. And now I need to go deeper, and I need another person to do that. Of course, this is not so mechanical like I'm talking. So the relationship can end here in this point, but also can start love. Finally, after some, if you do yoga, self-development work, therapy, meditate, or do fusion, for example, if you do any of those things, you can be a little bit more aware. So sooner you see the other, you start letting the projection fall, and you start recovering the projection, like, oh, I projected that. This is mine. And even with our shit, it also, and this is, now I have something very interesting to tell. Every time in your life that you have a conflict with anyone possible, you are projecting. It's you. What you hate in the other is yourself. Every time it's amazing, like, no. My mother-in-law, she's crazy, man. I hate her. No, she's really, really crazy. Can Wilber help us to see when we are projecting and when we are not? He says that when something informs you, like a woman enters here with a big salto alto. How do I say? High heels, like. Excuse me. No, no, no. And I'm just like, I don't like her. If something informs me, like, she's strange, but I don't feel affected, she can do that, she can appear something, she can act something, and this just informs me. But if I am transtorned, irritated, if I look at her and comment, look at her shoes, look at her hair, I don't like her, look the way she acts, and I am irritated, I am transtorned, I am angry, I fight, I have conflict, or I am afraid, or I am nojo, disgusted by her or by anyone else, this means that she is an aspect of me. There's a shadow part of me that I hate in myself, repress, and I project outside of me and I say, that's shit. It's there. But it's, again, mirror. Every time we conflict. If we are affected. Because if we are, there are people, some people are imbeciles, right? There are imbeciles in the world. There's not only great people. So sometimes I look and say, it's a pity. It informs me, this person informs me that his level of consciousness is this or that. But it's different when I am transtorned, like, let's go after the pedophiles. When I am like that, this means something. That probably I have this aspect in me that I need to integrate in my consciousness. This is the shadow integration that happens also in the relationship. And how do I do that? Well, in every shit, there is gold. What? This is an alchemical metaphor. Jung discovered that. In the worst, there is a very luminous aspect that I need in myself. For example, let's suppose I am Brazilian. I come from a very violent city, which is São Paulo. So I remember the violence, the assault, it was terrible. And I repressed aggressive violence. I hate violence. So, but there is something in violence that is luminous, which is assertiveness, that I repress too. So I become what I call a panhonha. I don't know what would be the German word for panhonha. That one, it's a panhonha, like. Someone just passes in the queue in front of me, and I said, yeah, okay. I don't have that. No, stop. No, it's my turn now. Sorry. I cannot do that because the luminous aspect of aggressiveness is repressed with the shit of violence. So I need to recover that inside of me to learn how to separate both, to again develop in me some aggressive behavior so I can say, stop, it's my turn now, you're not going to go in front of me. And this also, we learn a lot of that in the relationship. A lot of that in the relationship. I don't know why I'm talking about shadow suddenly. Don't know where I was. Self-knowledge. Self-knowledge. Yeah. Very important. So, I have 10 minutes. Love and intimidation. Yeah, answer any question. No, 10 minutes com as perguntas? Okay, good. So, what happens with love? Let's see what I wrote about that. Important. Marriage means psychological marriage, of course. Psychological marriage means that I choose to devote myself to this relationship. It's not easy. When love happens, I already lived all those aspects, so I choose to do some kind of sacrifice. Sacrifice means sacro officium, which means literally sacred work. It's not sacrifice. It's not that. I will sacrifice myself to you. What a horrendous idea. Horrendous? Does exist this word? Horrendous, I don't know. It's a terrible idea. No. Sacrifice means sacred work. Means I will commit myself to work my ego with you. Because after all those time, all those things, all these years together, we have something important in common beside everything that we lived. We know me. You know me. I cannot fool you. I cannot deceive you. You really know me. So the other really can point, you are again doing that, with love, with a commitment of, I will work with you, your things, if you work with me, my stuff, my shit too. Let's work together. So this commitment is what the vows, that ridiculous vows, which is in sickness or health, sickness, when we are sick in our psyche. We are very pathological in lots of ways. So we really need the other to help us to be healthy. Like, again, I am doing that. Sorry, because I did that. I don't know why am I feeling that. I don't know why I'm saying that. But this is the sick aspect that the other will help me to be complete in myself. The other thing is, sickness and health, rich or poor, it was not that, until death turns us apart or something like that, which means that I commit myself to the end of my process. Doesn't mean to the end of my life. It's to the end of this process. If this process ends with you, it's the end of this life that we have together. This is the symbolical aspect of the marriage. But this love can, we really can create things together. This is what is important, because we are not conditioned with animus and anima, inferior animus and anima. We can start developing a refined, a transcendent aspect of our interior, of our animus and anima, and projecting consciously, much more consciously in the other. So we really can create things together. We can recreate ourselves. We can put old elements in us in new synthetic ways, in a way that I can feel much more complete in myself. And with you, we can do things together. Eros is turned on again. We are again in love. That's what happened when I individuate, which means I am complete in myself. I look at you and say, wow, you are amazing. After all these years, I look to the person and I say, wow, I love this man. Or I love this woman. He's amazing or she's amazing. I am again, because he's an individual, I'm not half with him. Usually I feel that like that with my husband. When we are a bit far away, when we're together, I cannot see because I'm seeing me. When we are a bit far and he's doing his own thing, I look at him and say, wow, he's beautiful. Wow, he's so cool. Wow, I love him. And I can again see the individual that he is, and I can again be predisposed to fall in love. And this is the cycle. Starts again. So, and we will grow in that. First stage is the conflict are barbaric. And then second stage, third stage of this round, you start being more refined. You are much more in touch with yourself. You don't project so much. You recover the projection. You start choosing better people, because sometimes animus and shadow are together. So we unconsciously choose people that will hurt us. It happens when you choose again a man that will beat you, or that say that you are not good enough, or are going to say that you are a failure, are going to compete with you, or you are doing that with someone always. It means that animus and shadow are together, or anima and shadow are together. So you choose someone that makes part, that is the relation part, but is also your shitty part. So you need to separate the projection, recover the good part in the sheet, recover what you projected, and again, be in touch with that person. If the person do this work with you, because when you are doing, you are unconsciously inviting the person. Actually, you are unconsciously obligando, forcing the person to do that too. When you work in yourself, immediately you're surrounded. Everything changes. When I work with my kids, patients, children, all the environment change. Everybody start get crazy because the children start changing and the system around start changing. So you force the partner to change because you are changing. You're not fitting the projection. So, don't know where I was. The whole cycle. Yeah, you go and I go and I go, you go. Let's do some questions now, I think. I forgot to talk about homosexuality. Let me just talk about that. About homosexuality, very important. It's practically the same. The thing is that if I am a gay woman, what happens, according to Jung, because these theories, they are not closed. So Jung said, a woman has an animus, that's it. Now Jungian says, a woman has an anima and an animus, and she can project any part of that in the other. What we would say today in a balanced way is that whatever we have in our conscious development, in our conscious ego, the aspects that are not conscious will be unconscious and projected. It doesn't matter if I am heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, transsexual, it doesn't matter. Whatever I have developed in my conscious aspect, I will project in the other. It's not so much about male or female. It's simply about the polarity of what you are. If you are very practical, so probably you'll be interested in someone that is theoretical. If you're very intuitive, probably you'll be interested in someone that is very pragmatical. If you're very rational, probably someone that is feeling, that is a feeling type, will just amaze you, like, wow. And this is the aspect that is underdeveloped in us. This is what we are going to project. So practically, it's absolutely the same thing, okay? So now, some questions. Ooh. Oh. Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome.
I would like to know what is the difference for you in the behavior when we choose a friend and when we choose a lover? What is the difference in our setting?
It's very similar. It's very similar, really. Because what happens sometimes is that because we feel we can have two kinds of friendship. One kind is this complementary friendship. Sometimes you need someone that looks like you so you can see yourself, like how you function consciously. So you are like, let's suppose that you are very thinking, like in Jungian terms, you are the thinking type. So you think, you theorize. So you want to see that working. You need to relate to something like that to work that part consciously in yourself. So you choose a friend like that. But if you need to relate in a deeper way or to relate with your unconscious aspect that you don't have contact with, you will choose a friend that is the opposite of you. So both things can happen. But very frequently, you choose a friend that is also a projective target for your animus or anima. It's very frequent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How can I develop the animal side exactly?
Good question. Well, first of all, you must be in contact with your unconscious part. We are taught in our school, in our society, that we are only conscious. It's what Jung called the monotheism of consciousness. We are very polytheistic, we are plural. So we need to be in touch of different part of us and we need to challenge ourselves in things that we are not in control. We need to get out of our comfort zone and challenge ourselves. So all self-development work, like yoga, again, yoga. Yoga also can be a projective target for a very rigid animus if you put yoga like there. But you can do work with your body, you can do work with your mind, but mainly with your emotions. If you do some therapy, or if you do some group work where people can, forum work, where people can really talk what they think, where people can really be themselves, you can start working with this aspect. But mainly, if you know what is developing your consciousness, so let's suppose that you are a typical woman and you have the eros very developed. So you need to work with your logos. You need to start using objectiveness. You need to work with logos. You need to work with reason. You need to manifesting. because a woman takes care and have ideas, but sometimes she does not manifest. So she needs to manifesting. I will do it. I will do it for myself. I will be in contact with my opinions, my true values, my true opinions. And I will be in this point, dialoguing with my animus, not being possessed by him. Like, what do I really think about that? And I stay in my position, even if I have to confront other people that I think that are stronger in argument than me. So I stay in this position. I have to, and if you have the other side, for example, in my case, it's the opposite. I am very male in my mind. I argue a lot. So I need to be in touch with the other aspect, which is my animus aspect, which is more sensitive aspect, is more calm, is more bom senso, good sense. You know, good sense. I don't know. Common sense. It's not common sense. It's this aspect of, I know what to do. It's reasonable. This reasonable aspect, not being blah, blah, blah. So you literally must know yourself, know what you are in your consciousness, what is very well developed, and start working with the part that is not developed in you. This is how you develop animus or anima, for example.
Thank you for the talk. I have to admit that at the beginning I got really, really angry because you were using these terms, male and female,
sorry.
To explain things that hurt people very much in a way that is really, really violent.
It really pissed me off.
And I thank you and thank me that I stayed because I think I learned something from you. And I wonder, why do you still use these terms in this way?
It's the Jungian way of... It would be much better if I would just use yin yang,
maybe.
Not male and female. But what it's important, the way I justify myself is imagining that every woman have a male part inside of her. So we are one, we are both, like the Taoistic aspect. If we are female outside, we are male inside. So everyone is both. But in order to make easy to talk in these terms, I usually fall in this mistake of using male and female, but it's wrong. You are right. Thank you for the feedback.
You really risk losing a lot of listeners.
Really, really. Thank you for the feedback.
Because I think many people left because of that.
I think it's very good feedback. I will try to use the yin yang words or I don't know what other words could be neutral, but I will think about that. Thank you for the feedback, really.
Hi, thank you very much. It was really interesting. You've been talking about heterosexuality and homosexuality, but what about the bisexual and especially asexual people?
Yeah, bisexual is the same. Okay, so what I think that happens bisexually is that I have aspects in my consciousness that is very well developed, and I will choose the person that fits better. It doesn't have to have a dick or a vagina. It just have to be a person that fits the aspects of me that are undeveloped in my consciousness. And in the asexuality, I think it's the same, because if you are asexual, it doesn't mean you don't relate. You relate. You cannot relate in this level, but you relate. Unless you are a eremita in the gruta, in the cave. But even the eremita will have to relate with the ants and with the snails and will project somehow. But even in asexual relationships, you will project in other people the aspects that you need to develop in you. But I think it would be a bit more complex aspect to really, I think I really need to study that a bit more.
Any more questions? Okay, so that was it. A big round of applause for Juliana Esteves.
Thank you.